You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
Hello, this is Michael Silverblatt, and welcome to Bookworm. Today my guest is Michael Ondaatje, and in this brief 15-minute interview, we are going to talk about that impossible-to-talk-about subject, passion. Ondaatje seems to me to be the inventor of a certain, among other things, of a certain kind of scene of passion. The first time I saw it was in The Skin of the Lion, and the characters are speaking indented. Their lovemaking and passion and brutality seems to be going on in a constant underneath their dialogue, almost. And there's a quality, too, in the movie of The English Patient that begins with Catherine's slap, and you say about him that he loves it when he slaps her in the book. And I'm wondering about the originality, I guess, the off-centered quality. The passion in your books takes the reader by surprise and suddenly comes out of darkness in a flare, and I wondered how it's written.
Well, there's no premeditated element to the writing of those scenes. I mean, my act of writing is often one of truly surprise and discovery. You know, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen in a scene when Catherine and the patient are in a room together. You know, I don't know that she's going to slap him. I do not know that something that could be violent steers away from that, and, you know, it's part of a dream. So, I mean, I think passion surrounds us, and I think as a writer, when I'm writing, I'm just conscious that all the characters are governed by that. You know, I think it's what governs us in many ways. Unless something ascetic governs us, this also governs us. And it's always a surprise. You know, it is always new and wonderful and dangerous. So, I mean, it's difficult to know where these things come from, you know, except it does, I think, reflect somewhat truthfully the world around us.
Well, it interests me because it seems to me that the books begin in moments and end in moments of creation and destruction, that the poles of the Ondaatje world are the explosion of dynamite and the building of a bridge, that birth and death and being coexistent in that way, that a piece of action doesn't become interesting until it contains elements of its inception and its termination. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that that is the way that passion works in your books as well.
I think so. I mean, I know that the real motive for both In the Skin of the Lion and The English Patient is those are those love stories that take place within them, you know. And I mean, it is a case of love versus politics, or love versus, you know, love and intelligence at work, you know, and intelligence in every sense, you know. So these two things are kind of constantly at battle. I mean, a book like, for me, someone like Elizabeth Smart's by Grand Central Station, I Sat Down and Wept, you know, is such a great book, I think. And I mean, nothing can kind of touch that raw fire in that book. And and that book is full of irony and self-knowledge, and at the same time, this is a woman caught up in a passion. And I think what I loved about the poet Anne Carson is that there's a persona in those books of hers where you have this very, very intelligent woman, and she's caught up in a world of disastrous passion. And I think that I don't think anyone's really written about that. They've always talked about foolishness and foolish people falling in love, but to have a really intelligent person falling in love, which could be disastrous, I don't think has been written about as well as she has written about it.
It's interesting because someone once said to me about the novels of Thomas Pynchon that there was a very weird quality that people don't become real to him until they are removed. And so that it's only in the quality of remembering someone, or more, not being sure you remember them, or thinking that this woman with you might perhaps be your daughter, which is something that happens in Gravity's Rainbow, that the people become real. And I noticed that in the two later novels, in The English Patient and In the Skin of a Lion, there is a floating in and out of two women who both continue one another and replace one another. They alternate with one another in the chronology, or the anti-chronology, and it leads to the feeling that there is a spirituality of personality that goes on in these books, that people are embodiments.
In The English Patient especially, I mean, whatever the love story was between Catherine and Almazi, it really happens in his memory. You know, it's almost like he's a better lover when in the present than he was in the past. And it's almost like he's trying to understand something about that love story, and he has to reenact it, and he has to recreate it. And in the recreating of it, he falls in love really for the first time. I mean, I think some of that was happening in my head, I think, when I was writing that story. I wasn't sure how it fit in, but I think I can look back on it now and recognize something like that.
Now, although you're a very different kind of writer, there is something that Anthony Burgess told me about Ernest Hemingway that I thought might interest you. He said to me that from around the fifth year of his career on, Hemingway would put the paper into the typewriter and write dialogue down the center columns, that he always knew what people would say. And he'd, in fact, write 15 or 20 pages of dialogue and then go back, put the first page in the typewriter, and begin to describe their settings and their contexts, inventing those things only afterwards. And I wondered, I know that you don't do that, but I wondered about your response to that.
I don't think I could do that. I mean, for me, they grow out of each other. I mean, the dialogue has to grow out of her gesture across the room, you know. I mean, it almost is like a kind of a sing, an antiphonal, you know, thing between dialogue and the rhythm of the sentence beforehand, you know. And I know that one of the things, I love Hemingway's dialogue, actually. I think, you know, it's one thing I can always really like about his writing. And, of course, he's not been scorned so much, but, I mean, he's still a great writer. And but the dog does sort of grow out of the rhythm of the stage direction often. You know, I love the stage directions in reading plays. I mean, for me, I always miss that when I go and see a play.
What it made me think of, though, is that the Andaja book is a book made of juxtaposition, and the piece doesn't seem to know in advance what it's going to be placed next to. Or as you said about the collected works of Billy the Kid, that now you might have a passionate poem and it might be next to a poem about a turtle. That there's a quality in the books that the most useful thing about collage in them is the unexpected crevices of emotion that are opened up by the juncture of this with that.
Exactly. I think that's a very central thing for me. I have a joke poem, essentially, called Elimination Dance, which is this thing, a little game, really. And it was just, it's a set of one-liners. But what I discovered when I wrote that thing was that the humor came not in the line, but in the relationship between that line and the next one. I mean, I had some long thing about the Rosicrucians, and then the next line was those who have stapled themselves. And those who have stapled themselves is not funny unless it's right beside, coming after this rather pompous description of the Rosicrucians.
If I remember, that's the poem in which different segments of the population are singled out seriatim for elimination.
That's right. It's based on an old dance I used to go to when I was a teenager.
So Rosicrucians and those who have stapled themselves. But elimination does seem to be at the center here. I am in disguise describing those elements that I think are what make up the passionateness of Michael Ondaatje, my guest's writings. That is to say, juxtaposition, surprise, rhythm, that all of these things, especially the unexpected, it's almost as if in the love scenes of the book, there must be something that virtually blanks out consciousness, that you know the writer didn't know and therefore the reader couldn't know, mm-hmm. that comes up in the scene to incandesce it.
Well, I think that's what one wants to reach that point where you don't have that preparation, you don't have that premeditated sense of those stories that we've seen, we've been here, we've done that. I mean, I know the last book by Robert Stone, I thought there were some scenes of dialogue that were just like little boxing matches, you know. They were just wonderful, little jabs, and people prancing in and out with these lines. And when Stone is at his best, as I think he is in a book like Children of Light and also Out of Reach. There's some just wonderfully clear and just quick, and, you know, there's nothing pompous, there's nothing kind of, nothing draped in that work. It's just very quick.
Now, what do you think, or what can you think, of a writer who seems permanently and perpetually inspired, like Rilke, for instance, where there doesn't seem to be even a moment of the mundane? Is that, you know, like the Keats, it had better come as leaves to the tree, or it had better not come at all, or is it aspired toward?
I mean, I assume it was aspired toward. I mean, I can't believe you have that kind of magic permanently. You know? Unless you know, I mean...
Superior beings.
And what we know about Rilke's life. And
angels wrote.
That, you know, he was thoroughly not someone to live with. But, I mean, I think there are poets in America. I mean, there's a poet called Frank Stanford. I don't know if you know his work, but who died, you know, when he was very young. I think I keep waiting to read something about him because I think he was a kind of American Keats. I think that there was some just great, great writing in that man's short life. And I can read some of his poems, and they are just constantly magical. There's very little portage, you know, it's all quick canoeing.
Are there spiritual, intellectual, literary exercises that you do to bring yourself to a writing ecstasy?
No, I don't have any of those pencil sharpening techniques, but I do write until I kind of find a way out of that piece, you know. And I guess it's more evident in the earlier works in Billy the Kid, where there is a kind of Billy's in a room, he's on a barn, there are 300 rats in there. And I'm just writing this thing. I don't know what's going to happen. And then gradually that, you know, extinction follows. But I had no idea that was going to occur. I didn't sit down and say, I'm going to write a scene where he kills all these rats, you know. So it's finding your way out of that scene in the only way possible. And I think that's when you get to it. And then you go back and you edit it and you tighten it up, I guess. I mean, it doesn't... My first drafts are awful, you know, and they're kind of like, they're all over the place. There are lots of desk cancers. There's a lot of, you know, stumbling and mumbling, you know.
But often the solution to getting out seems to be fire.
I hadn't thought about that.
But you like it?
Well, it concerns me. I mean, sometimes the only way out is the way you don't like to go.
I've been speaking to Michael Ondaatje. The occasion is his visiting Los Angeles on the opening of the movie based on his book, The English Patient. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you, Michael.
My associate producer is Melinda Siegel. The engineer today is Jennifer Swadek. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next week on Bookworm.
To the jungles you can go in books.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is made available to the public radio system by SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica. Cassette copies of this and other Bookworm programs are available. For ordering information, call KCRW at 310-450-5183.
make you laugh and sing. Books tell you everything. They're your treasure, friends in prose and rhyme.
Now it's book of the mouse, mouse time.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Reptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.